Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Monica DeSantis. Democratic Senator John Kerry of Massachusetts, it's the latest to launch his candidacy to become the next president of the United States. At a rally in Charleston, South Carolina, Kerry criticized President Bush for not gathering more support for the war in Iraq and for an economic plan that, quote, comforts the comfortable at the expense of average Americans. Dozens of bystanders were injured when a car bomb exploded outside the headquarters of the newly formed Iraqi police in Baghdad. A series of bombings in Iraq's biggest cities have killed hundreds over the past several weeks, but it's not clear who is behind the violence. Priscilla Hoff has more.
Al-Qaeda, the militant group Ansar al-Islam, supporters of the deposed ruler Saddam Hussein, all these are possible suspects in the continuing violence in Iraq, along with the possibility of a brewing civil and religious war between the Sunnis and the Shia. U.S. Administrator Paul Bremer.
I don't have more details about the attack near the police academy this morning, but I know that one of our senior advisors was actually in the academy at the time.
Former New York City Police Chief Bernard Carrick has been consulting in Iraq, advising on how to create security for the nation. Priscilla Huff reporting.
A new poll shows most New Yorkers wouldn't be surprised by another terrorist attack. The survey conducted by the New York Daily News shows 56% of New Yorkers also don't approve of the way President Bush has handled the war on terror. 86% indicated that they thought another terrorist attack would take place, and one quarter of them thought it would take place in the Big Apple. John Hinckley Jr. will appear before a federal judge today to ask for permission to go on unsupervised visits with his family. He tried to kill President Ronald Reagan in 1981. He's been at Washington, D.C. St. Elizabeth Hospital for the past 21 years. Federal prosecutors are opposing Hinckley's request. On Wall Street this hour, the Dow was up 30 points, the Nasdaq up 6, and the S&P up 1 point.
For me, save a space for me in your heart, in your heart. Save a place for me, save a space for me.
Kids grow up and kids dream. Some dream of going to college. Dreams the United Negro College Fund helps make real. But for every deserving student we help, there's one we can't. Not without the funds. Please help us ensure there will be a place for everyone with a dream.
Save a place for me.
Please support the United Negro College Fund. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. Call 1-800-332-UNCF.
A message from the Ad Council.
Paxil has been approved as a medication for women suffering from a severe form of PMS. The FDA approved GlaxoSmithKline to market the popular antidepressant as a treatment for premenstrual dysphoric disorder. People from North Carolina to New England could be in for a major storm. Hurricane Fabian is packing sustained winds of up to 140 miles an hour in the Atlantic. Forecasters project Fabian will head north, but aren't sure where it will hit. They predict it will miss Florida, Georgia, and South Carolina.
Mom, Dad,
someone's going to try and get me to take drugs.
Want to do something about it?
You're going to have to make me tell you where I am and who I'm with every day.
Don't like the sound of that?
Tuck, you got to be the grown-up.
Kids with involved parents are less likely to try drugs. So ask them, who, what, where, when? Questions. They're the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 for more information. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
A Stanislaus County judge is expected to hand down a decision in the Lacey Peterson murder case. Steve Fredericks explains.
The judge in the trial of Scott Peterson is believed to be ready to announce a pivotal decision related to charges Peterson murdered his wife Lacey and their unborn son. McGeorge School of Law professor Ruth Jones says the judge will be asking the prosecution and the defense whether they have exchanged all information relevant to the case so the trial can move forward.
There's no longer this idea that there's going to be a surprise witness at trial that will reveal some truth.
But lawyers defending Scott Peterson reportedly say the prosecution has not given them all evidence related to the case. They have a list of items they want, including the tapes of conversations Peterson had with Amber Fry, the woman Peterson was having an affair with. They're said to be trying to push the preliminary hearing to November. In Sacramento, I'm Steve Fredericks.
And I'm Monica DeSantis. You're listening to IE America Radio Network News.
Rogers with today's Car Clinic Minute. On her way to Oz, Dorothy feared lions and tigers and bears. Oh, no! But they're child's play compared to critters who might homestead in your car. Oh, yes! When I come back, I'll name names. Want to know the secret to finding a shop that can keep your car running like new? Find the cleanest shop in town, where cleaning is top priority. Not talking about clean floors, but better shops have those, too. I mean shops that have the best training, equipment, and chemistry to clean every air, fuel, and fluid system in your vehicle. Keep it clean, and you don't have to keep replacing parts. Find your clean shop at bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com. You think Noah had it rough managing all those beasts? At least he had an ark, but some of them might hole up in your car. According to Pennzoil's survey of 16,000 auto technicians, culprits for some repairs were furry, feathery, or scaly, like chickens trapped in air filters, squirrel nests in the AC, snakes wrapped around brake rotors, and rats storing dog food in exhaust pipes. But wait, don't call the Pied Piper. Have your vehicle checked out regularly by a qualified technician. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Oh, so much going on today. This week, boy, oh boy, what a great week this is turning into. Weather-wise, news-wise, all sorts of amazing things happening. I wanted to share with you, I've lost it. I had Brett Bercy was on last week, and we gave out the wrong URL for his website, and I had it sitting right on top of this stack of stuff here that I was going through just a moment ago. And here it is. Great. The website, the URL, because a couple of people had sent me emails about this. I can't find it. For Brett Bercy. Brett Bercy is the guy who had shown up at a George W. Bush event. Bush was speaking inside an aircraft hangar or something like inside some great big building. And Brett was not trying to get inside the building. He was standing out on the street along with thousands of other people, all of them holding "We love George Bush" kind of signs. And Brett had a sign that said "No war for oil." And the police came along to him and they said, "If you're going to hold that sign, you've got to go to the free speech zone." And Brett said essentially what Barney Frank said, "Hey, I thought the United States was a free speech zone." And they said, "Nope, sorry. The free speech zone is that cage a quarter mile down the road where it's out of sight of the press and out of sight of the president and out of sight of all these good people who love our president." You know, it's really interesting. Yesterday, I watched the news report on two of the major networks last night about George Bush's Labor Day speech. And in both of the ones that I saw, they described the crowd as loving, affectionate, positive. One of them described the crowd as upbeat. The New York Times today called it a subdued crowd. But nobody pointed out that there wasn't a single protester in that crowd, as there hasn't been in any crowds around George Bush ever since his days as governor, when he instituted the policy of anybody who might be a protester, who looks like a protester, who has a protest sign, gets shuttled off to the free speech zone cage and stuck in that cage. The last guy to do something like this in the history of Western civilization was Adolf Hitler. And here we have this, and it's all about creating positive photo ops. It's all about causing people who watch television, I mean, you only got 1,000 people there for George Bush's speech, They all know that there's protesters down the road. Maybe they don't, actually. In some cases, the protesters are so far away, even the people showing up for the speech can't see them. But it really doesn't matter what they think in the minds of Karl Rove and Bush's handlers. What matters is what the American people see, what the American people think. And so they're creating these photo ops. So they came up to Brett Bercy and they said, if you're going to hold that no war for oil sign, you've got to go stand in the free speech zone. And he said, no, this is a public street. And so I believe I'll just stand here with this sign. And so, as they have done at Bush speech after Bush speech after Bush speech, stretching all the way back into the 90s when he was governor of Texas and did the exact same thing, the only governor in the United States who had the audacity to do this kind of thing, who had, not audacity, it's a total and complete disregard for democracy. I mean, it's beginning to look to me like this man hates democracy. He hates the institutions, the First Amendment, upon which this nation was founded. I find that very frightening. So anyhow, they said to Brett Bercy, sorry, the rule from the Secret Service, the rule from Herr President Bush, is that if you hold a sign that says anything negative about him, you have to go to the cage a quarter mile down the road with all the other protesters, surrounded by police and kept out of the line of sight of the, and in fact, he's got now affidavits from two police officers in two different cities telling them that before protests, they were approached by the Secret Service and told that they had to create free speech zones, cages, chain link fence cages, and make sure that the cages, the free speech zones, were out of eyesight and out of earshot of the president and the press. Now, you tell me what this is about and what's causing this. So anyhow, we had Brett on. Oh, well, to finish up his story. So he gets arrested by the local police. The local police say, oh, yeah, you're not going to move to the free speech zone. We're going to arrest you for trespassing. And he says, trespassing? I'm standing on a public street. I'm not trying to even get into the event where Bush is. And he said, tough luck, you've got a no war for oil sign, so you're trespassing. And out of the thousands of people standing there, they arrested him. Well, the state prosecutor, having some wisdom, I mean, they did what they wanted to do. They got him in jail for a couple of hours so that his no war for oil sign did not show up on CNN. But then they let him go, and the state of South Carolina decided not to prosecute him. As happens all over the United States. This has happened over and over and over and over and over again. This president of ours, who hates the liberties enshrined in the First Amendment, has ordered his goons in the Secret Service to order the local police to round up anybody who has a no war for oil sign or anything close to it. Let me quickly qualify that I don't consider all of the folks in the Secret Service to be goons. There are some very good and noble people serving our country as police, as Secret Service officers, and the FBI and the CIA, right across the board. But anybody who tells a protester in the United States, in a public area, in a public street, that they do not have the right to assembly, in my opinion, is a goon, has not bothered to read the First Amendment of the United States of America. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the rights of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. You may not stop the people from peaceably assembling. You may not, particularly if their assembly has to do with petitioning the government for a redress of grievances. So anyhow, after the state dropped the charges against Brett, as so many other states have done, just to clear the way for the good photo ops, I mean, this has happened over and over and over again. The federal prosecutor in South Carolina the son of Jesse Helms, as I recall. I think his name is Jesse Helms Jr. I don't have the paper in front of me. Or was it Strom Thurmond? One of those two guys. I think it was Strom Thurmond, now that I think about it. Anyway, the namesake of his father, the right-wing senator, the federal prosecutor, decides to bring federal charges against Brett Bercy for threatening the president, which is you can get prison time for. And so he's now being charged with this crime of threatening the president. His threat, he stood a block away on a public street with amongst thousands of other pro-Bush protest, demonstrators, groupies, holding a sign that said, "No war for oil." Well, he was in court 2 days ago, and on it goes. But anyhow, the link, the website, is www.sc, as in South Carolina, pro, as in protesters, net, as in network, .com. scpronet.com. So that's the website if you want to learn more about that. Our quote for the day from Franklin Roosevelt: confidence thrives only on honesty, on honor, on the sacredness of obligations, on faithful protections, and on unselfish performance. Without them, it cannot live. If you'd like to drop into our chat room and participate in one of the most fascinating and intelligent and insightful conversations on the entire Internet, which I do read, in fact, during the breaks, go to liberaltalkradio.com or tomhartman.com and click on the links to the radio show page. Click on the links to the chat room. It's about two clicks away, and it'll get you there. And the program, of course, today is broadcast live, coast to coast, on the IE America Radio Network. Also on the Sirius Satellite Stream 145, and broadcast on the Internet from radiopower.org, live365.com, IEAmericaRadio.com, and we have streams at WhiteRoseSociety.org. And, in fact, for those of you who are wondering, if you didn't hear the program yesterday, some of you I know listen to it at work or listen to it when you're driving. Many people drive for work. We did a live program yesterday. And the first 2 hours of the program were about Labor Day, some really fascinating stuff. I thought it was a great show. And good guests, good callers. It was fun topics. And our third hour was particularly interesting in that it was a full-blown, straight-out expose of the relationship between Reverend Moon and the Republican right. And I thought it was, just doing the research for me, the stuff that we had dug out and that our producer Joe McPherson dug out, just amazing stuff. Just absolutely amazing stuff. Shocking. Startling. And on it goes. I have some follow-up stuff on that today in our second hour. By the way, just to let you know what we're doing today here on the Tom Hartman program. And this is Tom Hartman, and it's 18 minutes after the hour. What we're doing today in our second hour, we're going to have on David Cobb. David Cobb is the general counsel to the Green Party. He's a friend of mine. He's a great guy. And if Ralph Nader doesn't run for president, there's a good chance on behalf of the Greens that David Cobb will. He's their head lawyer. He's essentially the number one guy in the Green Party. And we're going to have him on, and we're going to ask, what's the most effective strategy for liberals and progressives to influence national policy? And, of course, we're going to get into discussions of what's going to happen if Ralph runs again, or if Ralph doesn't, if some other Green does. I mean, you know, what are the Greens up to? What's going on? And then in our third hour today, we're going to have on an expert about North and South Korea. And this is going to be, this is fascinating. This is going to bring us back in some part to the Reverend Moon stuff and the Republican activity in Korea. The founder of the Washington Times, that stalwart of conservative proclamations, George Herbert Walker Bush, in honoring Reverend Moon, said he only reads, or he loves to read, the Washington Times. And we're going to learn about the relationship between Reverend Moon and North Korea, giving them money back in the late 90s. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was a straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risk.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll-free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George VI to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Prepare to be astonished!
Okay, so just what is going on here, people?
Did you know that you can get the best of Progressive Talk Radio on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145?
Oh, really? Well, that's remarkable.
Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145 is loaded with political talk radio from the other side.
Hurrah!
Kick it off your morning with Doug Steffens, Good Day, from 5 a.m. till noon Eastern Time, followed by the Tom Hartman Show from noon to 3 p.m. Then get different perspectives from different show hosts on Radio Free Speed Zone from 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera then takes the reins from 5 p.m. till 7, followed by All American Talk Radio from 7 p.m. till 9. Then get ready to fire up your night with the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time, all live Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145, powered by the only progressive talk radio network, IE America Radio Network.
So what do you want, a medal?
Well, isn't that special?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
We have grown, although our love is still special. Let's take a chance and fly away somewhere alone.
It's been too long since we took the time. No one's to blame. I know time flies so quickly.
The secret Saudi history. Sarah Whalen is an investigator and reporter. She went down to the National Archives, the U.S. National Archives. I've been there. It's a, you know, this building in Washington, D.C., and where they've got all these old stuff, you know, all paperwork and whatnot. And she had asked to see copies. She'd asked to see records that had to do with Saudi Arabia in the 1950s and 1960s. And the clerk that she talked to told her that the, well, here I'll quote, "I'm sorry," the clerk at the U.S. National Archives said, "you can't see the Saudi Arabian documents. It's part of the Patriot Act," the clerk said. "This the U.S. State Department records you requested are declassified and theoretically available. There's nothing wrong. These are not secrets. These are not hidden things. But they're not sharing them with researchers anymore. And they're claiming the Patriot Act. These are records about the guys in Saudi Arabia who are business partners with George Bush Sr. back in the old days." And when she persisted, and she said, and I quote, "the documents I see are over 30 years and even older. Any person the record concerns would be either quite elderly or already dead." And the clerk said, "sorry, you can't look at the Saudi records even if they're 100 years old." She says, "come on, whose identity would a terrorist be able to steal from these records? Dwight Eisenhower, Nixon's, Kissinger's, King Faisal's? They're not easy identities to steal." "Ask again," hissed the clerk. "And I will call security to remove you from the building and have you barred as a security risk." So then she asked to see a supervisor, and the supervisor says, "why are you looking at Saudi Arabia anyway? Are you writing a book or an article? Who publishes your work?" And so she says, "why do you want to know? Am I on some kind of list?" And he says, "all researchers are on some kind of list now, I'm afraid." Oh, this was a nearby researcher says this. And it just goes on. And in the end, they threaten to arrest her. They threaten to arrest her for asking to see unclassified documents that were public records about Saudi Arabia. And this is just one more dimension of this. You know, one of the things that I find particularly interesting, you know, there's this strategy, and there's actually a name for the strategy, and I apologize, I forget the name. If you know the name, give us a call, 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937, of this strategy I'm going to describe. And for that matter, if there's anything on your mind you want to talk about today, you know, give us a shout. 1-800-TALK-YES. But basically the strategy is identifying what you think your opponent is going to do, what behavior you think that they're going to perhaps righteously engage in, and labeling it, and thus when they do it, people will go, ha-ha. For example, don't you think it's entirely reasonable that in the political arena, if a politician is screwing up, that his or her opponents would point to them and say, that person is screwing up? And everybody would say, yeah, hey, we ought to vote in somebody else. But yesterday in Crossfire, they played this long clip of Bob Novak saying to Paul Begala, you know, you Democrats are really in trouble because the only thing you can do, your entire hopes for electoral victory hang on George Bush screwing up or on the economy being bad. Well, of course, if George Bush was protecting the environment, if he was protecting civil liberties, if the economy was going great, maybe even I would be supporting him. But he's not. This is called politics. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
Shell workers in the Niger Delta are on strike again, bringing the company's oil production there to a sudden halt. The workers say Shell's making plans to bring in expatriates from Europe to run its facilities, eliminating most of the local workforce in the process. Shell calls the complaint an unfounded rumor, but says it does have some restructuring to do at its Nigerian facilities, the details of which have yet to be announced.
Officials in New York State's Nassau County have a novel approach to handling a budget crisis. Stop paying the workers. If county officials follow through on their threats to implement their so-called lag payroll plan later this month, more than 1,000 corrections officers at the Nassau County Jail will see their salaries lag by 10 days' pay over the next 5 months. The missing funds could be collected without interest only when the guards quit their posts. The county says it'll help free up more than $2 million in revenue, but the Police Benevolent Association, which represents the guards, calls the plan illegal and is preparing a lawsuit.
Victory for an inflatable rat used in a protest by mechanics at a Ford dealership in Ohio. The mechanics at Fairfield Ford voted to join the International Association of Machinists last November, but the dealerships refused to recognize the union. So the workers hauled out a 12-foot inflatable rat earlier this year, which they've positioned on the median of the busy highway that runs past the car lot. The city of Fairfield cited the protesters for a zoning violation, claiming the rat was an unpermitted structure in a public right-of-way. The mechanics responded by filing suit in federal court, charging the city with violating their First Amendment rights to symbolic protest. Last week, a judge in Cincinnati issued a temporary restraining order against the city, meaning the rat can stay, and the court's expected to make the order permanent in a few weeks.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Tom Hartman Show. Bill in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, posting on our message board. The doorbell rang and I answered the door. Just as I finished posting how fed up I am with Bush, what a surprise. The guy standing in front of my door was very Republican look about him. His first words to me were, "Hi, I am your Republican precinct captain." Boy, has this guy got the wrong address, I said to myself. But not before I made it known to him that I consider Bush a menace to America. He started squirming and glancing around the front of my house. Our junkie responds. He says, "I remember when the only people we had to worry about meeting on our doorsteps were Jehovah's Witness crusaders. Now we have right-wingers. That's really scary." How to scare off door-to-door Republican visitors. And Klaus adds, "Well, answering the door naked can have the desired effect."
For Christ's sake, will you cover yourself?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. I remember many years ago, my introduction to politics, one of my, a very close friend of mine, a good friend and my roommate for, I don't know, a little less than a year, back when I was young, was a state representative in the state of Michigan, a Republican congressman from the city of Grand Ledge. And I really, and I was a college student at the time, and he was the youngest state representative ever elected in the history of the state of Michigan. He was in his early 20s, and we shared this apartment for a while, and it was fascinating to see how politics worked in Michigan. And I, you know, I used to go down and hang around the Capitol building and sat in a couple of committee meetings and help, you know, sat in on campaign strategy thing. It was just, and at that time, I was not a Republican. In fact, at that time, I was in the middle of the anti-war movement. And his sentiments, I think, were moving in that direction. And ultimately they did. But I just remember being fascinated by politics. And I remember being fascinated by the wonder of this adversarial process. You know, that it's actually a good thing that there be people on both sides of an argument who are saying, no, my way is right. No, my way is right. No, this is the right way to know. If you do it that way, it's going to be a disaster. No, but if you do it that way, it'll, you know. And these debates, these discussions are the foundation of good government. I mean, this is the key to democracy, is open debate, is dissent. The founders understood this so well. I spent most of last weekend inside Thomas Jefferson's head. I probably spent 20 hours reading his collected letters, which I have been slowly going through. I've got 17,000 of them here. I've been slowly going through them for the last 4 years. I started out writing a book about Jeffersonian democracy, and it turned into the book on equal protection. And now I'm back to writing that book about Jeffersonian democracy, which will be published next year. It's going to be called The Athens Experiment. I'm still writing it. So I was working on this book this weekend. And I keep coming across these letters between Jefferson and the people that he disagreed with, talking about how wonderful it is that they have this disagreement, how important it is, how healthy it is, congratulating each other. I mean, his letters to John Adams in his later years are legendary. For 20 years, these guys didn't talk to each other because of the big rift that happened over the Alien and Sedition Acts. But as when they became elderly, they renewed their friendship, and it's fascinating to read that. So anyhow, I think in the kind of best of worlds, this whole notion of clean politics and political debate and you know, people arguing things for the good, even when there's agendas going, is a good thing. And what's dangerous, and what was clearly dangerous in the minds of Jefferson and Adams and I don't know about Hamilton, but certainly Madison and Mason and John Jay and Ben Franklin, and what was so clearly dangerous in their mind was that any faction should gain supremacy over the United States government. James Madison wrote about this at length in Federalist Number 10. I encourage you to read Federalist Number 10 and Federalist Number 24 if you want to know his thoughts on this. As I recall, I think 24 was the right one. I'm pretty sure. Number 10 for sure. And the factions that Jefferson was most concerned about and that he wrote at length about were the faction of what he called monopolies in commerce. In fact, he proposed that there be a ban on monopolies in commerce as one of the ten amendments to the Constitution. I've talked about this many times in the program here before, so I won't go into it at length. But just to remind you, one of the factions that he was worried about was corporations that would buy other corporations and end up so big that they would have enough power that they would be able to manipulate politicians. Does that sound familiar? And that was one of the factions that he was concerned about. The other faction that the founders, including George Washington, were very concerned about were the religious factions. Now, I want to be absolutely on record as saying that I support anybody's right to have any religion they want. In fact, I think that, broadly speaking, at a personal level, religion is a good thing. That's my opinion. I think on a national level, religion probably has acted out in a horrific way, and perhaps most of the most hideous crimes of what we call civilization have been done in the name of religion, including the political crimes. And this was something that was just so apparent to these guys. Let me digress for just a moment here. I got this. I was going in a particular direction with this, and then I got off on where I wanted to end up. Will Hillary run for president? 50% now of Americans are saying that they think a Democrat can beat George Bush. And so this Hillary buzz is going on. And this Wesley Clark buzz. Let me tell you very quickly, and then I'm going to get back to my rant on religion, what I think is going on here. And this comes back to one of the two factions that Jefferson was concerned about. One of the factions that Jefferson was concerned about was monopolies in commerce, that is, feudalism, a return of rule by the rich. The other faction he was concerned about was the rule by the religious. And in the area of rule by the rich, it was those who would advance political agendas that would first and foremost favor the corporate. Well, this, ever since Hayes was discarded, the last, in my opinion, competent, decent Republican president. I don't want to diss Dwight Eisenhower. There were some very good things about Dwight Eisenhower. But anyhow, ever since the Republicans threw Eisenhower, they didn't even know if he was going to be a Democrat or Republican until a couple of days before he announced that he was going to run for president as a Republican. Many people thought he was going to run for president as a Democrat or as an independent. So I'm not even sure that you can call Eisenhower a Republican, but in any case, you know, it was sort of like Wesley Clark. You know, he was a general. He didn't have a political affiliation. But when they dumped Hayes and they brought in Ulysses S. Grant, who ran arguably the most corrupt administration in the history of the United States, and that was when the corporations essentially took over. And it led to a backlash, the backlash being the populist movement of the late 19th century and early 20th century, which did some very good things in the United States. Championed the right of women to vote. Most importantly, I think, not most importantly, but what they considered their major project at that time was the direct election of the Senate. The Senate was this incredibly corrupt organization rich men who were appointed by professional politicians in the states. That's how the original Constitution defined it, which was something Jefferson also opposed. So anyhow, to make the point here, I know I'm wandering. The Republican Party has been in the hands of the corporations basically since they dumped Hayes, you know, after the death of Lincoln and then Jackson and then Hayes, and went to Ulysses S. Grant. The Democratic Party, since it was created by Thomas Jefferson, the Democratic Party being the oldest continuously functioning political party in the history of civilization. And I don't know why they don't tell people this more often. The Democratic Party has traditionally taken the position, as Jefferson did, of we believe that a autocracy, whether it's a meritocracy that is ruled by the most intelligent, or whether it's an aristocracy ruled by a hereditary few, somebody's father was president, therefore they're entitled to be president, the whole noblesse oblige and all this stuff, that the Republicans and the Federalists had traditionally embraced should be thrown out the window, because ultimately you can trust the will of the people. This is what Jefferson said. And Adams, of course, said he's nuts. They're rabble. Adams loved to refer to common people as rabble. Didn't think they should be allowed to vote. Worked hard to make sure that they couldn't vote. If they couldn't own land, they couldn't vote. And so the Democratic Party has traditionally taken this position on the side of you and me and everybody else, all the working people out there, the folks who are the what we would today call the middle class and the working poor. They have traditionally, this has traditionally been the harbor. The Democratic Party has traditionally been the harbor for these people. And during the Clinton administration, things changed. And this bunch called the Democratic Leadership Council came along, funded by corporations, and said, well, we think that, you know, I mean, look at all, we've got this incredibly corrupt political system now. Ever since 1978, in the Boston versus Pilate Supreme Court case, so much of this tracks back to this 1886 Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad case that I wrote my book on equal protection about. Anyhow, ever since the court, ever since the Supreme Court said corporations are persons and can participate in politics and throw money at politicians because that's a free speech First Amendment right, ever since that happened in 1978, politics in the United States have become so corrupted. I'm sorry, in 1987. They have become so corrupted that the only way that we can win, said the DLC guys, against the Republicans, the only way we can beat them is to beat them at their own game. In other words, they're in the pockets of the corporations, and the corporations are lavishing so much money on them that they're really starting to win elections. Even if it requires hiding their issues and saying essentially lies. Oh, so I'm a compassionate conservative. Off with his head. I'm in favor of democracy. No, they can't protest near where I'm speaking. They said, we got to do the same thing, the DLC. And so during the Clinton administration, you saw the rise of the corporate takeover of the Democratic Party. And you saw the beginnings of the end of the Democratic Party. This was, I mean, everybody talks about, you know, Clinton, Clinton's electoral victories. Look at all, he was, Clinton himself was very popular. He's a brilliant politician. He's a man who has the ability to project his personality through a television camera right into your living room, and you feel like you know him. But his policies and the DLC policies of bringing corporations into the Democratic Party and pandering to the corporate interests, as he did with many cases, nothing close to what this administration is doing. But the big examples are NAFTA and GATT, the World Trade Organization. Began the ruin of the Democratic Party. This is why the Democratic Party started losing seats. In the 96 elections, in the 98 election, in the 2000 election, I place the blame at the feet of the DLC. So anyhow, now they've got this thing where Howard Dean is really starting to go. And here, this CBSNews.com, Hillary for President, article yesterday, September 1. Another reason for Hillary buzz, says CBS, is the fact that there is some concern among Democratic leadership that if Howard Dean were to get the presidential nomination, he would not be electable. There's a real anybody but Dean movement forming, particularly in Washington, they say. Well, let me share my take with you on this. I don't think that they are at all concerned that Howard Dean is not electable. These people are not stupid. They have done their political homework. They have looked at Howard Dean's record as governor of the state of Vermont, and they know that he really and truly is a centrist. He is a social liberal and a fiscal conservative. He's what 40 years ago would have been called a Rockefeller Republican in many circles, and today would be called a moderate Democrat. Although you could say in some areas he is very liberal. No, he's in favor of civil unions. He's in favor of instant runoff voting. I don't know why these things are called liberal. But in any case. But what they're concerned about is not that he's not electable. What they're concerned about is that he's not a Democratic Leadership Council a candidate. So now we have this bizarre situation where the Democratic Party itself is being torn apart by the pseudo-Republicans, the Republican light of the Democratic Leadership Council, and Kerry and Lieberman and Hillary, who want to make sure that if there is blood in the water, if it is possible that George Bush can be defeated in 2004, and it's starting to look like maybe that's the case, that the Democrat that defeats him is not going to be a Franklin Roosevelt-style Democrat who believes that the role of government is to protect the people. Heavens no! They want to have a Bill Clinton-style Democrat, or even worse, who believes that, well, yeah, one of the roles of government is to protect the people, but another is to protect the corporate interests. Straddling the divide. And so you're going to hear more and more attacks on Howard Dean. And if Kucinich was leading in the polls, they'd be going after him too, or Sharpton or Brown or any of them. You're going to hear more and more attacks on these people coming from those in the Democratic Party. Not because they fear that they're not electable, but because they fear that they will close the doors to all that cash that's coming from those big corporations. The fact that Howard Dean has been able to raise millions of dollars on an average of $50 a contribution, $38 a contribution, has them horrified. They can't control that. Here in the Democracy Zone, I'm Tom Hartman. This is IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
When I wear black, even a little dandruff shows. And my old dandruff shampoo just wasn't cutting it. I still had flakes and dry scalp. So I switched to Selsun Blue Moisturizing Shampoo with aloe and moisturizers. Doctor recommended Selsun Blue has a proven ingredient to relieve dandruff. Plus, it keeps my hair and scalp healthy and flake-free.
If you see flakes, try Selsun Blue. Selsun Blue Moisturizing Dandruff Shampoo.
I'm telling you, it really works.
Never wear black without the blue. Selsun Blue. Use as directed.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was a straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risks.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll-free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL. 96 Steel today.
It's new. It's a new choice. And it's here now. It's new Levitra. Levitra Vardenafil HCL. And it's time to ask your doctor. Levitra. It's new. It's news. And it's available by prescription only. So find out about Levitra. Call 1-866-LEVITRA. Visit Levitra.com or talk to your doctor about the new choice. New Levitra. Call 1-866-LEVITRA.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
The ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're going to kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boys, come on!
Show.
According to Abbas, immediately after Bush promised to speak with Sharon about the siege on Arafat, Bush said, quote, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then God instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. When God specifically whispers in someone's ear, I want you to go kill those people, and they go ahead and kill somebody. What do we do with those folks? We arrest them. They are jailed, in some instances, executed. We immediately identify them as crazy. You know, Ashcroft is going to say,
wait a second, George. God has been talking to me. God told me. Not you. God told me. These people are crazy.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
So they're coming to take me away.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You know, there's a new thing in spam. And maybe you've seen this, where they send out something that's patently offensive or marginally offensive. It's either a sex spam or it's a Viagra or something like that. And very prominently, above the fold on the spam when you open it, and they're getting really good at getting you to open these things, there's a little line that says, click here to get off this list, or don't send me any more of these emails. And you click there, and it takes you to a website, and it says, put in your email address, and we promise we will not send you that email anymore. And so you type in your email address, and sure enough, you don't get that email anymore. However, you suddenly get about 20 others. Those people were actually not trying to sell Viagra in the first place. If you had tried to actually buy something from that spam email, they wouldn't have been able to sell it to you. This is the new thing in spam, is what they're really selling is email lists. And so what they want you to do is come put your email address into that website and thus confirm that it's a real email address, because lists of just trolled, gathered email addresses sell for, you know, a tenth of a penny a name, but you can get as much as a dollar a name for a good solid list of email addresses that have been confirmed. Now, I tell you this story. Many of you probably already know it. But I tell you this because I think this is the same thing that's happening with this do not call list. Here we have 41.7. The deadline was day before yesterday. So the deadline is over. And so I can talk about this. I should have brought it up before now, but you can still get on the list, but, you know, they roll the thing over every 6 months, I think it is. 41.7 million Americans have gone to this website or called this 800 number and said, don't call me. Put me on the do not call list, which means the telemarketers can't call you. But it also means that you're on a list of real people who actually have real phone numbers. Lists like that are gold. And guess who's exempted from not having to not call? Charities, pollsters, and political campaigns. Politicians just got a 41 million name mailing list for free, and they can call all they want. Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense in the radical middle. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
This is my
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
Ooh,
you hate me?
Why don't
me?
Have something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Dozens of spy standards have been injured after a car bomb exploded today outside the headquarters of the newly formed Iraqi police force in Baghdad. It's just the latest in a series of bombings in Iraq's largest cities recently that have killed dozens of people over the past several weeks. And as we hear now from correspondent Priscilla Huff, it's still not clear exactly who's been behind the violence.
Al-Qaeda, the militant group Ansar al-Islam, supporters of the deposed ruler Saddam Hussein, all these are possible suspects in the continuing violence in Iraq, along with the possibility of a brewing civil and religious war between the Sunnis and the Shia. U.S. Administrator Paul Bremer.
I don't have more details about the attack near the police academy this morning, but I know that one of our senior advisors was actually in the academy at the time.
Former New York City Police Chief Bernard Carrick has been consulting in Iraq, advising on how to create security for the nation. Priscilla Huff reporting.
Today's car bombing has now been blamed for the death of one Iraqi police officer. A new poll today shows most New Yorkers wouldn't be surprised by another terrorist attack right here in the United States. The survey conducted by the New York Daily News shows 56% of New Yorkers also don't approve of the way President Bush has handled the so-called war on terror. 86% indicated they thought another terrorist attack would in fact take place, and one quarter of them thought it would happen in the Big Apple. With a decommissioned warship in the background, Senator John Kerry today formally announced his candidacy for president. Speaking in Charleston, South Carolina earlier, Kerry called President Bush's economic record a, quote, astonishing failure.
I reject George Bush's radical new vision of a government that comforts the comfortable at the expense of ordinary Americans.
The decorated Navy veteran was once considered the front-runner for the Democratic nomination, but former Vermont Governor Howard Dean has in recent weeks grabbed the lead in New Hampshire.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Because I look like doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
John Hinckley Jr. will be in a federal courtroom today to ask a judge for permission to go on unsupervised visits with his family. Hinckley, of course, tried to kill President Ronald Reagan back in 1981, and he's been at Washington, D.C.'s St. Elizabeth's Hospital for the past 21 years. Federal prosecutors are opposing the request. Republican Congressman William Janklow is due to appear in court today in South Dakota. Janklow, who was once governor there, has been charged with second-degree manslaughter in the death of a motorcyclist last month. Janklow does, in fact, have a history of speeding.
All right, folks, while we have a minute, let's go up to the chopper with Brad Paul, get a traffic update. Brad, what do you see up there?
Well, thanks a lot, Scott. Nothing you're going to want to hear about, unfortunately. You can expect major delays on the interstate. An overturned tractor trailer's got traffic backed up for about 25 miles. It's a real bad situation, Scott, but I do have good news.
What's that, Brad?
I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See how much you could save. Visit geico.com. Geico, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
A court hearing scheduled today for a man convicted of selling intelligence secrets to the Israeli government. More from correspondent Allison Brown.
Jonathan Pollard, a former civilian intelligence analyst for the Navy, was sentenced to life in prison in 1987 after being convicted of selling classified code information to the Israeli government. Pollard's sentence is considered the most severe prison term ever given to a spy operating on behalf of a U.S. ally. Pollard's attorneys expected to include that fact in their arguments, asking a federal judge today to lessen his sentence. Lawyers for the U.S. government, however, expected to maintain that Pollard stay behind bars for the duration of his sentence. I'm Allison Brennan, Washington.
And federal investigators in Erie, Pennsylvania are still trying to find out if a pizza delivery man who apparently robbed a bank was actually a victim in the crime. Brian David Wells was found wearing a bomb when he was stopped for allegedly robbing a PNC bank branch. Wells told officers he had been forced to wear the bomb and rob the bank by another man. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Bayonets ready. Take aim and fire. No, you're not in a World War I time warp. You're changing your glove compartment bulb. When I come back, I'll tell you how to hit the bullseye. In today's world of discord and disappointment, one thing's for sure. Car cover owners are so satisfied, they buy their car covers all over again. Think car covers are a hassle? No. Research shows owners find covers easy to put on and take off. Are all covers the same? No. The standard in car cover fabric is Blockit by Kimberly Clark. Don't let sun and dust damage your car. Kimberly Clark's Blockit fabric's got you covered. That's Blockit by Kimberly Clark. Don't get up in arms about burned out glove compartment bulbs. You can relight the way in these easy steps. With protected hand, grab your bayonet. Bayonet bulb, that is. This little light is so called because of the protrusion at its base that receives electrical current. Now push in slightly and turn counterclockwise to remove. To install new bulb, line up bayonet with socket slot, ease in, and turn clockwise. Now relax. You've won the battle of the bulb without a single casualty. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
Hello, welcome. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. And we're working on trying to track down David Cobb here, so we'll have him on shortly. But in the meantime, just to share a couple of things here with you. In the Observer, the Guardian, you know, the Observer and the Guardian are two newspapers published by the same foundation. The Sunday paper is, as I recall, called the Observer. An American law firm... This is from Sunday. An American law firm with ties to the Bush administration has been hired to help set up a legal system in Iraq. I have a feeling I know which way this is going to go. In the United States, when we set up our legal system here in the United States, we said very clearly, only human beings have human rights. Now, of course, they screwed up in the beginning. I mean, it was only white male landowners, but nonetheless, the precedent, the concept was in place, and over the years, we've been able to fill it in and fix it, although we still have a long way to go, but I think we're moving in the right direction, or we have been. And then this thing came along where corporations got personhood, and there's Shar's number. So... when the South African government got reorganized, and after the end of apartheid, five American corporations offered free lawyers to the government of South Africa and went in and said, "Hey, we're going to help you out. We're going to help write your constitution for you." And they said, "By the way, in America, corporations have the same rights as human beings. Unions don't. Churches don't. Governments don't have rights. They only have privileges." But humans do and corporations do. Rights of free speech, rights of privacy, rights against discrimination. Powerful, you know, these rights are mighty clubs that you can use to beat back. And so the South African Constitution has written right into it by corporate lawyers what they're dreaming of in America. And to some extent is the law in America, unfortunately, and it can be changed, and that's a whole, you know, the topic of a whole other show. But anyhow, that corporations are persons and have human rights. So now we've got this these buddies of George Bush. This law firm, Squire Sanders and Dempsey, has been drafted by USAID to advise on privatizing former government-held industries, structuring government economic and regulatory agencies, and developing a tax structure. The legal deal is part of a larger package worth up to $79.6 million taken on by Baring Point, formerly called KPMG Consultants, to advise on the restructuring of Iraq. Crony capitalism continues. George W. Crony Capitalism Bush should be his name. This is outrageous. David Cobb has served as the general counsel for the Green Party of the United States and was the Green Party candidate for attorney general in Texas in 2002. And the bio here says he is currently seeking the Green Party nomination for president. He also serves as campaign director for Reclaim Democracy and travels the country lecturing and conducting workshops regarding the illegitimate corporate usurpation of our democratic authority to govern ourselves. I'd like to welcome my good friend and one of America's true patriots, one of our really and truly caring, honorable, extraordinary, honest, and hardworking in the political arena citizens, David Cobb. David, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, gosh, Tom, thank you so much. I'm humbled.
Well, now you got to run for something, I guess. this bio here that I got, it said he is currently seeking the Green Party nomination for president. Are you competing with Ralph for that, or are you going to do it if Ralph doesn't?
Well, no, I am competing with Ralph, Tom, because I believe that you've seen the strategy that I've laid out, because I believe that the Green Party needs to run a campaign that culminates with George Bush out of the White House. And as such, I have articulated a strategy on how that could happen and am now traveling the country going to Green Party locals trying to persuade Green Party folks that is the campaign strategy that we should follow. My campaign is not about David Cobb being the nominee. My campaign is about articulating a strategy that the Green Party should pursue in 2004.
That's great. That's great. Our number, by the way, is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. If you have questions for David Cobb, general counsel and possible Green Party nominee for President of the United States. David, my understanding of your strategy, I read this here, and just to try and boil it down to a sentence or three, basically is in those states where if the Green Party is really aggressively participating, it may harm the possibility of a Democratic electoral victory, electoral college victory, in those states, then the Green Party will have a presence but won't aggressively compete with the Democrat. Whereas in those states where it's clearly going to go with the Democrats no matter what, the Green Party is going to try and grab as much real estate as it can. Is that a good summary of it?
That's a good summary, as well as in those states where it's clear it's going to go to the Republican, the Green Party will compete.
Right.
I mean, all political junkies, and I know you are one, Tom, all political junkies know that historically there are about 10 to 12, at most 12 states, the so-called swing states are those that are actually, quote, in play. Those are the states that the Green Party should stay out of aggressively campaigning, at least for president. That doesn't mean that we wouldn't still can be running hard in local races and other statewide races. Now, that's it in a nutshell, but let's remember the two caveats, because I think these are important caveats, and I certainly want your listeners to hear those. If Al Sharpton or Dennis Kucinich are the Democratic Party nominee, then I believe the Green Party should completely stand down and put all of our efforts and energies at the national presidential level behind either Kucinich or Sharpton.
Yeah, but we both know that's not going to happen.
Well, sadly, we suspect that, but I think that it's important, actually, that we keep that sort of on the table.
Sure.
Because the fact of the matter is that both Sharpton and Kucinich are articulating the same kind of principles and values and policies that any Green Party presidential candidate would. The other caveat is that if Joseph Lieberman is a Democratic Party nominee, that the strategic so-called swing states are completely out the window, and that the we would run an aggressive campaign in all states
to defeat Lieberman and reinstall George W. Bush.
That's correct.
Yeah, I you're not getting much argument from me there, even though I've been preaching on the air here for forever that I will vote for anybody but George W. Bush.
Even for you though, Tom, I know that a Lieberman would be a sleepless night before the election to decide what you would do.
Well, and that's the point. I was talking about this just before the hour, before we got you on the air here, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. You and I haven't had a good conversation about this stuff in a while. We've both been just not so busy, I think.
It's true.
I'm seeing the attacks on Dean ramping up from within the Democratic Party, and this whole speculation about Hillary running and Wesley Clark and all this kind of stuff. And in my opinion, what's really going on is that Dean is a non-DLC candidate. In fact, we had Joe Trippi here on the show, and he was talking about how, you know, Dean is repudiating the Democratic Leadership Council. He's trashing a lot of the concepts that they stand for, and really is trying to build, his average campaign contribution is what, either $38 or $58, one or the other, as opposed to, you know, George W.'s, raising $1 million a night with a bunch of billionaires in a room. And Louis says it is $58, yeah. And that's something that's never been done before in politics. And what I think is happening is that they're trying to make sure that whoever runs for president as a Democrat, even if it's not one of these nine guys right now, if it turns out that Lieberman isn't going to be able to beat Dean, is somebody who is a DLC candidate. Do you think that that's the name of the game in the Democratic circles?
Listen, the DLC is exercising as much control and authority as it possibly can, and it's not just the DLC, of course. It's all the sort of corporatist Democrats are doing everything that they can to ensure that somebody that is acceptable to them is the nominee.
Right.
Certainly, I think that's true. It is a sad state of affairs that the Democratic Party, the sort of apparatchik of the Democratic Party, is genuinely up in the air.
Doesn't the fact that the pro DLC Democrats are so anti Dean give you pause to reconsider that there's only two candidates? That, I mean, what about Carol Moseley Brown and what about Howard Dean?
Well, I don't think that either of those are articulating the kind of core fundamental values that actually transition us away from the destructive path that the entire corporate capitalist, or as you call it, the crony capitalist state is taking us down. Certainly, Dean or Moseley Braun would be those kind of candidates that we would run a campaign that would say that we'd want to culminate with them in the White House rather than George Bush. But not the kind of campaign that says that they would articulate the values that a Green Party presidential candidate would. For example, Howard Dean has been, in his own words, very clear that if you want universal health care, quote, I'm not your guy. Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate his honesty. So he's not my guy because I want universal health care. In addition to that, he's specifically...
Well, before we go on, David, okay, can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah, sure, please.
I asked Joe Trippi about that here on this program. I've also spoken with several of the senior candidates, senior campaign aides in the Dean campaign. And because when Howard Dean was governor here, he worked very hard to get every child in this state insured. And right now, I think 98% of the kids in Vermont are fully insured, and the 2% that aren't are the ones that haven't bothered to sign up for the program.
That's true.
And I said... And one of my very dear close friends here in Montpelier, Deborah Richter, a physician, is with Physicians for National Healthcare, which is promoting a single payer system, and they all know Howard Dean, and they're everybody knows everybody in this town. I live in the capital city of Vermont, and you know I said, you know, isn't Howard Dean in favor of a single payer system? It's the cheapest way to go. I mean, if we had a national single-payer health care system right now, we could insure everybody in America 100%, no deductibles, eyes, teeth, everything, and it would cost actually less than we're spending right now on insurance because the insurance companies are skimming so much money off the top. And Joe Trippi's response was, and the people in the Dean campaign's response was, yes, we absolutely agree with that, and that's where we want to go. That's where we have to end up. But the political reality is that if you put single-payer health care system on the table as your starting point, you will get so much blowback, as Bill Clinton did when he and Hillary tried to do something even remotely close to that, where the insurance company spent $300 million to destroy them. You'll get so much blowback that you'll get nothing. So instead, let's get a lot more people insured. Let's get have those 40 million people who are uninsured. Let's get half of them insured. Let's get three-quarters of them. Let's get all of them insured in some way so that they have this feeling of, hey, insurance is an entitlement. Insurance is one of those things that they talked about in the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And now let's try to make it more efficient. And then in stage two, you go for a single-payer health plan. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that, David. We got a break here. If you can hang on just over the break. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with David Cobb.
Nice drive, Jim.
Ah, thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was a straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risk.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George VI to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this.
Here's Nancy in the background. Nancy.
Oh,
Nancy.
Am I on the air?
Oh. Hello.
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 Sorry.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Congratulations, the recession is over. In fact, it ended almost 2 years ago, according to an official committee composed of seven academic economists and known as the Bureau of Statistical Silliness. Only kidding, it's actually called the National Bureau of Economic Research. And this bunch is not kidding with its recent assertion that the recession ended in November of 2001. What? You say you're out of work and can't even get an interview, much less a new job? You say your 401k is now only a K and that personal bankruptcies are rampant? You say that nearly 2 million jobs have been lost since November 01, that corporations are still dumping 200,000 workers a month, and that long-term unemployment is the highest in decades? You say that corporations are now sending our high-tech jobs out of the country? You say these seven economists should have to wear polka-dotted clown suits and sport Pinocchio noses when they talk such nonsense? Now, now, it's not the fault of these seven sillies. In dating business cycles, they're legally restricted to a technical, academically narrow definition of recession that bears no relationship to what you might call reality. After all, in the ivory tower or on the heights of Wall Street, terms like jobless recovery can be tossed around cavalierly, for it's not them or people they know who are jobless. So such things are merely statistical curiosities rather than economic nightmares. Indeed, a top economist at the Bank of America said that the Bureau's official declaration of the recession's end is useful because it, quote, should help confidence on the part of businesses, investors, and consumers. Yoo-hoo! Economists! Down here at the ground level, economic confidence usually involves having reliable income, which, excuse my economic jargon, means a steady job at good pay. This is Jim Hightower saying, I think that only laid-off economists should be allowed to serve on this National Bureau of Economic Research.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Kathy, I'm lost, I said, though I knew she was sleeping. I'm empty and aching, and I don't know why. Counting the cars on the New Jersey Turnpike, they've all.
It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with David Cobb of the Green Party USA. Unlike Ralph Nader, who I don't think has ever joined the Green Party, David is actually alive and kicking in the party. He's a general counsel. I suppose you could say he's kind of the head of the party. And is that an accurate portrayal of
you, David? Absolutely not. I serve as the legal advisor for the party. I've been an active member. I helped found the Green Party of Texas and have traveled the country, but it's very important to me and your listeners to understand that we don't have a, quote, head of the party in the traditional sense. I am an active member and have some degree of earned leadership in the party, but definitely not the, quote, head.
Okay. There is no big cheese in the Green Party.
No big cheeses in the Green Party, Tom. Although, okay. If you want to come and speak sometime, we'd make a special category for you.
Medium cheese.
Medium cheese. David,
I'd like to get your thoughts on my suggestion that what Howard Dean is doing is trying to be pragmatic and that's not good enough for the purists. But I've also got a couple of calls here, so I'd like to get to these calls and then maybe you can respond to that after we hear what
sure.
John in Long Beach and Tim in Connecticut have to say, if that's all right.
Sure.
So 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And John in Long Beach, California is on the line. John, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program with David Cobb.
Good morning, Tom, and good morning, David. Now, this is my dream team. It's subject to change, naturally. But if I had my druthers, would be Kucinich as vice president and Bernie Sanders as president.
I'd vote for that in a heartbeat.
And and I know Bernie is an independent, but as I emailed somebody, I said, if I were one of the heads of the Democratic Party, I would get on bending knees to Bernie and beg him to join the Democratic Party, at least temporarily, and that they would be behind him 100% and give him all their resources. And if he did become president and secured the White House, then he could go back to being an independent. Of course,
yeah.
That will never happen, but it's a nice dream.
Yep. Okay.
Well, John, along with Tom, I would gladly support that ticket.
What does David think about Bernie?
He's fantastic. I mean, I think it's telling, though, that Bernie is not comfortable within the Democratic Party as currently constructed, and in fact, he is nothing more than genuinely a sort of core Franklin Delano Roosevelt type Democrat.
Why don't you guys try to rope him in?
We've been trying. His independence is a constitutional reality.
Well, let him keep his independence, but just see if he'll. It is like Nader did, but he could still run as president on your ticket.
I don't think Bernie. I mean, I've been watching Bernie for years here in Vermont, and I don't think Bernie is interested in affiliating himself with the Greens any more than the Democrats. I think it just has to do with his wanting to be independent on the one hand, and number two, when he was the governor or when he was the mayor of Burlington, Vermont, which is the largest city in Vermont, I believe, the San Francisco of Vermont, this beautiful city over on Lake Champlain. He was a socialist. And I'm not sure that the Greens or the Democrats are sufficiently socially liberal for him.
Well, you know, I am probably right in my assessment of Bernie as an individual.
Yeah. Yeah. John, thanks for your comments. David, we just have about 30 seconds here left in this segment. We've got to take a break, and then we can get to Tim's call, and we can get into these things with a little more detail. But have you had any contact with Bernie?
Not me personally, but talk to folks in his staff, and we're huge supporters.
Great.
Bernie articulates Green Party principles and values the same way that...
The same way that... David, you still there?
I'm here.
Yeah, okay. I missed a few words of yours. Anyhow, we'll pick that up right on the other side of the break there. David, thanks. John, thanks for your call. I appreciate that. Dave, hang on. We'll pick you up back on the other side of the break. David Cobb here with you on the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
The genetic qualities of some farm crops might cause serious problems for their wild relatives. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Pollen from domesticated plants like corn and rice can spread to the wild relatives of those plants if they're growing nearby. Some ecologists say this movement of pollen has a very real potential to affect entire populations of the wild relatives. They say it could eliminate genetic qualities that make the wild plants unique, and it might even eliminate the plants themselves. Ralph Haygood is an evolutionary ecologist at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. He worked on mathematical models of how pollen moves between populations of plants. The models show that in some situations, domestic plants could permanently alter wild populations within a few decades. Haygood says that deserves more attention.
One of the major arguments for preserving biodiversity, in my judgment, is simply that we're losing lots of things we don't even understand. We don't know how valuable they might be from any of a number of perspectives.
One way farm plants can affect their wild relatives is by assimilation. That's when genes from crop plants replace genes in the wild ones and slowly turn them into hybrids. Another way is demographic swamping. That's when wild plants take on qualities of domestic ones and lose their fertility in the process. Over time, the wild plants simply disappear. Haygood says there's a good reason why this needs close consideration.
Although these processes have been going on for thousands of years, the scale of them today is unprecedented because the size of the human population and the amount of land being devoted to agriculture is unprecedented.
Haygood's research is being published by the Royal Society of London. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our...
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Looking in your eyes, I see
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, broadcasting from outer space on the Sirius satellite system, and streaming live on the internet from live365.com, radiopower.org, ieamericaradio.com, and with archives at whiterosesociety.org. Our guest today is David Cobb, General Counsel for the Green Party of the United States of America, Green Party candidate for Attorney General of Texas in 2002, and currently a candidate for nomination for the Green Party, for President of the United States, a Green Party candidacy for President of the United States. And, David, we've got a couple of calls here. Tim in Connecticut's on the line. Tim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. Thanks for calling 1-800-TALK-YES.
Good afternoon, Tom and David. We look forward to coming to Connecticut. We're a very active Green Party. We'd welcome you. Got 17 candidates, a record for us as we continue to grow. And we're looking forward to people like yourself and others who want to continue on and build a Green Party across this country.
Well, Tim, thank you very much. And, in fact, I am planning a trip out to the Northeast. I'm sure you know John Batista.
Sure.
John is actually putting together a trip in October, even as we speak. And I think Connecticut is arguably one of the premier success stories for the Green Party. You know, Tom, your listeners might be interested to know that the Green Party of Connecticut did not even exist until 1999-2000. And in that short amount of time, have elected people to office, have built infrastructure, have created a state party. Connecticut is a perfect example of the fact that the Green Party is getting larger, stronger, and better organized with every election cycle. And, Tim, what I'm articulating as a potential presidential candidate is, with that growing strength comes a responsibility to use it wisely in the best interest of the country. Now, you and I, as Greens, know and understand that we need a truly independent political force, completely independent of corporate money, in order to articulate the kind of principles and values that we need. Having said that, I believe that a Bush 2004 candidacy is so dangerous that we need to run an aggressive campaign that grows the party, builds our infrastructure, and culminates with Bush out of the White House. That's the kind of campaign that I want to be part of.
And I appreciate that and stuff. As a matter of fact, we just had Ralph in to do a fundraiser here. And by the way, Tom, he's done, I think, 45 appearances all across the country supporting the Green Party. Little digs like, he's not even a Green Party member.
You know, but he's not,
one
Tim.
Of the, it's a promise.
He won't join the party.
Tom, if you'll give me a second, he made a promise to his late father never to join a political party, and I respect that because he's trying to, even in some other campaigns, there was a Labor Party and other people that he tried to bring together into a unified progressive force, and I think that's what ultimately the Green Party should do, and I think that, you know, again, like Ralph said this weekend, where are the Democratic candidates as far as, you know, getting a fair and balanced, if you'll excuse the term, a debate commission that isn't run by the Democrats and Republicans? Where's their commitment to true, you know, campaign finance reform? Dean's already talking about, you know, jumping out of the system. All of these factors, you know, make it, with the exception of probably Kucinich and Sharpton and a few people like that, you know, the Democratic Party is becoming more and more unlikable. They're not standing up for the kind of values we have out there. And I think a lot of us Greens out there are saying, you know, we're not going to apologize for 2000. It's time to move on. You need comments, David, about that.
No, I mean, I think that it's certainly an accurate assessment that the kind of people who end up being Democratic Party nominees for president are not the ones that articulate our principles and values. And I actually just want to acknowledge, though, that there are women and men of goodwill who share our principles and values, and like Tom Hartman, for example, who have a different tactic. And my approach to people like Tom is to say, you know, Tom, if you're right and we can get the kind of world that we both share through the Democratic Party, then prove it to me. Because if it starts to happen, I promise you I'll join up. But I can tell you, I've had decades of work within the Democratic Party for Jesse Jackson, for Jerry Brown, and it's been proven to the contrary to me. Consequently, myself and many others are forming an independent politics, an independent political party, and we're actually electing people to local office across the country. We're building infrastructure, we're growing, And it's a great untold story. I mean, it's true that you can hear it on the Tom Hartman show and a couple of other radio programs, but it is a great untold story that the Green Party is the fastest growing political party in this country.
And we're certainly not averse also to working in conjunction with parties like the Democratic Party to kick out Bush. I mean, that is our, you know, certainly our goal and stuff too, but instead, you know, we're getting, you know, state after state getting shut out, being told, you know, don't even run for office, and with incredible ballot laws that won't even allow our candidates to run. I mean, we are, a lot of us out here are willing to sit down at the table and talk about, you know, forming a true progressive majority, you know, and like people like Ralph Nader and others say, yeah, you know, Gore won with the, you know, almost 53% of the vote, you know, so where's the Democratic Party? We're ready to do it. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. I appreciate that. And David, as Tim knows, I have outed myself on this program since the last time we talked. While my wife voted for Al Gore, I voted for what's his name? Ralph Nader in 2000. And, of course, this was a safe state, Vermont here. And so I figured, well, you know, it's a safe state. I can vote for, you know, I wanted the Greens to get as many votes as possible to have access to matching funds and things like that. But one of the top priorities in your strategy, and after you get to this question, we've got Pete on the line in Florida, is the implementation of instant runoff voting, IRV. As you can see in Australia, this actually helps third parties get into the political process. Obviously, IRV is a crucial goal for the Greens, and Howard Dean supports IRV. Wouldn't it make more sense for the Greens to support throw their support behind him, get him elected, make IRV into law, and then progress from there?
Well, Dennis Kucinich also supports instant runoff voting, and I'll tell you, with respect, Howard Dean supports instant runoff voting because, as you well know, the strength of the Progressive Party in Vermont. One thing that history has shown us is that electoral reforms only come into being when there are strong, vibrant, independent political parties that are threatening the status quo. Instant runoff voting and preferential voting exist in New Zealand, in Australia, elected the mayor of London, and they elected the president of the Republic of Ireland. In every single instance, Tom, it was because there was an outside so-called minor or alternative party that was getting enough votes that it was threatening the system. The only way we're going to get instant runoff voting is if there is a vibrant political party, and I think both on the left and the right, in order to challenge the system. This country is much more rich and diverse than two political parties. We wouldn't tolerate it in our choices of breakfast cereals. We shouldn't tolerate it in terms of our politics.
Oh, sure, sure. And it's a mistake. I mean,
it's
Madison writes about this in the Federalist Papers in Federalist 10, where he complains about it. But it wasn't until 1840 that John Stuart Mill came up with proportional representation.
Absolutely right, Tom. Once again, your research is impeccable. The fact of the matter is, this country is operating under an antiquated voting system. Single member, first past the post was the best that there was for representative democracy and a voting system at the time of the founding of this country. But while the rest of the country, rest of the world has gone on to proportional representation and preferential voting systems, more cutting edge kind of tools to allow democracy to be vibrant, we are laboring under an antiquated voting
system. And we need to fix it. And as I said, Howard Dean is in favor of fixing that. And I take umbrage at your implied swipe at him, saying that the reason he's supporting it is because he saw the strength of the progressives here in Vermont. I mean, I think that that's a great reason to support it, to see that something works.
Well, I apologize if you perceived it to be a swipe, Tom. I'd never swipe at you.
I meant at Dean, and I'm not, you know, I am not trying to take the position as I'm the Howard Dean talk show host or anything like that. I mean, people ask me about, you know, what kind of governor he was, and I tell them. In fact, in the last hour, I talked about how Howard Dean is a Rockefeller Republican in many ways, but you know, I'm not sure that that's a bad thing, frankly. Pete
that's
from
fine.
Lakeland, Florida, has called 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937, and is on the line here. Pete, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program with David Cobb.
Hey, glad I could catch you.
Yeah, me too.
David, something's interesting. You guys may be a victim of your own success. Now, myself in the last election voted for Ralph, and I still haven't found a Democrat that can defend Al Gore's views while I debate them, so nobody gives me any heat. I recently went to a Democratic meeting, and I'm in a, like, Tom DeLay district area,
right.
Very, very Republican. Let me tell you, The people at these meetings are liberals, and they're not in the back of the bus. Even they're Democrats. They're talking free trade. They're against this drug war. They're against this prison industrial complex. They are tearing it up. Bill Nelson, the senator from Florida, came down, and I don't think he expected to get blasted the way he got blasted on his voting record. He thought he was in a Dixiecrat crowd, and let me tell you, the liberals in the audience tore him up. And he's, what's really weird is when you give them facts and figures and what's actually happening, and you compare it to their voting record, they look scared, but, you know, they start running off with the mouth like they're on C-SPAN, you know, telling you it's the sky is purple. And they never flinch, but you can tell they're shook because their aides are taking notes. I mean, the Democrats, the presidential candidates, think about Joe Lieberman. People openly mock him in these Democratic meetings saying, what party's he in again? Dick Gephardt. He's got to be wondering what's going on. Kerry's got to. That's because when they get in the office, they forget about the working person. Now they're coming out and they're running for an election, and somebody like Howard Dean's cleaning their clock. And I look for Dennis Kucinich to come up and make a move on Howard Dean, because he's going to go after Kucinich is going to go after Howard Dean in California over medical marijuana. And I mean, they got Kerry jumping up and down. You don't know what he stands for anymore.
Yeah, Dean, I don't believe is opposed to medical marijuana. I just don't think he's in favor of it. He's a doctor, and he's got this.
The ironic thing out in California would be interesting with all these people in the media covering Arnold and covering Kobe Bryant. It'd be nice if a few Greens could come up to and ask him, why don't you leave these 4- and 5-star hotels and start covering the war in Iraq? Or are you guys going to wait until November, December when it's only 80 outside?
Right.
Well, listen, I got to say that it is exciting that you are having the same experience that I'm discovering as I travel the country, and that is that there is an animated progressive voice who are uniting around the idea of defeating George W. Bush in 2004. It goes beyond that. Just as it goes beyond building the Green Party, I'm not committed to building the Green Party for the sake of building the Green Party. I'm for building the Green Party as a tactic and a mechanism in order to reach universal health care, living wage, and into the NAFTA and World Trade Organization treaties that are an end to the corporate corruption of our political system by moving towards publicly funded elections. To me, the Green Party is a tool and a tactic. It's one that I'm exercising. Many others, literally millions of others, are exercising it as well. If there are progressives who are actually working within the Democratic Party and do it in such a way that the Democratic Party nominates progressive candidates, then you will very likely see many more Greens supporting progressive candidates. I know very few Green Party people who are so dedicated to the Green Party, right or wrong. Instead, what we're saying is we need progressive candidates, and if the Democratic Party won't provide it, we will.
Yeah, it's the principles. Pete, thanks for calling. I appreciate your comments there. You know, David, Louise and I had this kind of running debate before the election of 2000 where, and not just Louise, a number of people that I know, and I remember when George Bush first jumped into the race. I started saying George Bush is going to be the next president of the United States. And everybody was like, oh, no, there's no way. You know, Gore's ahead of him 15 points in the polls, and he's an idiot, and he is born with a silver spoon in his mouth, and he can't speak coherent sentences, and, you know, nobody's going to vote. Quack, quack, quack. And I said, he's got more money. He's got a lot more money than Al Gore. He outspent Gore by, what, $50, $60 million, something like that?
That's right.
And although the reality is, I suppose I was wrong, that Gore pulled 500,000 more votes than George Bush did, I underestimated the intelligence of the American people, thus showing that old cliche that's been variously attributed to A.J. Liebling and to, P.T. Barnum was wrong. The second half of what I was suggesting was that, number one, Bush is going to become president. Number two, he's going to then begin actually doing the things that he and Reagan and these other extremists, these right-wing extremists, have been talking about. And he's probably not smart enough to figure out how much damage it's going to do. I mean, Reagan had one big tax cut followed by six serial years, one year after another, of tax increases, including the largest tax increase in the history of the United States until George W.'s father came along, who gave us the next largest increase, just to undo the damage from the first Reagan tax cut. I'm ranting here, pardon me. But the point that I was making is that he's going to swing this country so far to the right that average people are going to go, whoa, what's going on? And you're going to see a backlash, and it's going to be actually a good thing for American democracy. Now, on the other hand, just a few minutes ago when you and I were talking, Louise made the point that she would even vote for Joe Lieberman, and I'm saying I'm not sure that I would. And she said, if you don't, doing this talk show, and Bush gets four more years, we'll probably both be in jail under the Patriot Act for sedition, you know, for speaking out. And you know, what do you think about this idea of polarity and how much damage can be done to democracy, and is it irreparable, and can we come back from the edge? And, you know, Louise's position is that it would be better for us to be fighting against Lieberman than against Bush. At least he would give us a fair fight.
Well, listen, I'm fighting against not just Lieberman or Bush as individuals. I'm fighting against a corporate capitalist state that oppresses most workers, that is destroying the planet. You know, Tom, I just want to share with you, and let me do it publicly on the air, I finally got around to reading The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, and I want to urge all your readers to do so, your listeners to do so. It's a book, folks, written by Tom Hartman, your host, who you're used to hearing rant and rave and be witty. Let me tell you, it's one of the most profound books I've ever read. And you know, Tom,
well,
I'm a Green Party activist because I know that you describe reality in that book. And yeah. Lieberman or Bush is a momentary issue. It's weather. We're talking about climate here. We're talking about something deep and systemic, and that's what the Green Party is about.
Yeah, we are living in a world in crisis. I mean, it's an absolute reality, and we've got to do something about it. The question is, what's the best strategy? And it's a tough one. David, stick around. We've got another break here, and then we'll have another 3 minutes to wrap up the hour. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. You can stay around, David.
Yes?
Okay, great. Stick around. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
And we're playing all your favorites, but right now I have a pair of free tickets to tonight's big concert for the third caller. Oh, let's go to the phone lines. They are heating up, and let's see. Hello.
Hello.
Is this Ms. Shannon Johnson?
Yes, it is.
Oh, you sound very excited.
I am.
Well, Ms. Johnson, I have good news.
I'm the third caller.
No. I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
You're strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
What do you think I like about commuting with nature as much as I do, being on the tractor as much time as I do, or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? You're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to animal talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Show. Jody in Arlington Heights, she said, first, yesterday's show was the first time I was seriously concerned for your health. I hope you've recovered. You know, I'm fine. I get crazy. My blood pressure skyrockets. I understand that. I have a pretty good doctor who recently put me on blood pressure medicine, and it seems to be working. There have been times when I've done talk radio when I thought I was going to burst an artery, but that would make for good radio, wouldn't it?
Hey, did you hear my wife program the other night? Some bitch died right on the air. There was this popping sound. Woo, man, cool. I bet Rush couldn't do that.
Sorry, didn't mean to frighten you. You're a bit late for that.
Hey, funny just...
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, and we're talking with David Cobb, General Counsel for the Green Party of the United States and candidate for the nomination for the position of President of the United States on behalf of the Green Party of the USA. He's also the campaign director for ReclaimDemocracy.org, one of the advertisers of this program, and travels the country lecturing and conducting workshops regarding the illegitimate corporate usurpation of our democratic authority to govern ourselves. David, we've only got about 2 minutes left here. Where are you going from here? Where is your candidacy going? Where is the Green Party going? What do you think the odds are that it's going to be you or Ralph? And when's all this going to be decided?
Well, this will all be decided in the summer of 2004 at our nominating convention. Remember that Green Party activists are the ones who choose the Green Party's nominee, just the way that Democratic Party activists and voters will choose the Democratic Party nominee. That's why I'm actually focusing my campaign not so much in the media per se, but instead traveling literally to grassroots meeting of local Green Party chapters and state party meetings across this country, laying out my strategy for growing the party, building the infrastructure, and working in partnership between the Green Party and the nominee, in this case myself, I hope, and with a strategy that culminates with unelecting George W. Bush. Mm-hmm. And if people want to hook in, they can do so at www.gp.org.
GP as in Green Party.
Exactly.
And let's just, one last time, it's been an hour nearly since you first said this, and people tune in and tune out, and people are driving around in their cars and whatnot. I think that this is brilliant what you're doing, and because now there has been enough research done. You know, I don't know if you, did you see Mike Hirsch's thing? Did Nader help Al Gore in 2000?
Yes.
And, you know, there have been these analyses that purport to show that the Greens actually put George Bush in office. And as I said, I'm not sure that that's necessarily a bad thing. I think it was a necessary wake-up call to America. I don't think people realize how right Bill Clinton was.
It's not necessarily clear that that's true or not, though, Tom. Let's just be clear about that. We don't exactly know. What we do know is that the Green Party has helped galvanize progressives.
Yeah.
That's
but
for sure.
but just in a 1 minute nutshell, how would you do things differently this time, or how would you recommend that the Green Party do things?
You know, Tom, I'm
it's
outlining
to be a 20-second nutshell here.
I'm outlining a strategy that says the Green Party should run an aggressive campaign, should get on the ballot in all the states that we can, run local offices and state offices. But for president of the United States, we should run an aggressive campaign that culminates with Bush out of the White House. We do that by focusing on those states where the Electoral College votes are safe, where they're not in play, in those 10 to 12 states where they might be swing votes, not target resources there.
Great. I got to stop you there, David. Okay. We've run out of time. Thank you very much. David Cobb, Green Party of the United States, GP.org. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. One Iraqi police officer is dead and dozens of bystanders have been injured after a car bomb exploded today outside the headquarters of the newly formed Iraqi police force in Baghdad. Bombings in some of Iraq's largest cities have killed dozens over the past several weeks, but correspondent Priscilla Huff says investigators still aren't sure who's behind the latest wave of violence.
Al-Qaeda, the militant group Ansar al-Islam, supporters of the deposed ruler Saddam Hussein, all these are possible suspects in the continuing violence in Iraq, along with the possibility of a brewing civil and religious war between the Sunnis and the Shia. U.S. Administrator Paul Bremer.
I don't have more details about the attack near the police academy this morning, but I know that one of our senior advisors was actually in the academy at the time.
Former New York City Police Chief Bernard Carrick has been consulting in Iraq, advising on how to create security for the nation. Priscilla Huff reporting.
The inquiry into the death of British government advisor Dr. David Kelly has now heard from the last person believed to have seen him alive. After yesterday's testimony from the weapons expert's widow and daughter, attention now turns to those involved in the search for Kelly following his disappearance. More from correspondent Suzanne Chislett.
Dr. Kelly's neighbor told her she met him about a mile from his home after he left to go for a walk. She told the inquiry they had chatted briefly and the 59-year-old had seemed normal. He was found dead the following day. The hearings are now focusing on the final few hours of Dr. Kelly's life and will also hear evidence from police officers involved in the search for the scientist and the ambulance crew which recovered his body. Suzanne Chislett, London.
And Massachusetts Democratic Senator John Kerry is now the latest to officially announce his candidacy to become the next president of the United States. Kerry chose the retired aircraft carrier Yorktown, docked near Charleston, South Carolina, as the backdrop for his announcement. Kerry says he is running to restore our strength in the world, as he put it, and he criticized President Bush for not gathering more international support for the Iraq invasion and for his economic plans.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Just because I look like... doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
Camera technology designed to recognize and pick out potential terrorists at airports has failed its first major test. USA Today says two separate face recognition systems at Boston's Logan Airport failed 96 out of 250 times to detect volunteers as they passed security checkpoints. Meanwhile, 5,000 additional federal air marshals are expected to be added to existing marshals policing the nation's passenger jets. Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge today is also expected to announce all states will be given secure video and telephone communications to better share classified information.
Are you still paying the price for something you did in your past? No, not that embarrassing incident at the frat house. I'm talking about all those high-interest student loans you agreed to. Well, we can help. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. Anytime, 24/7. We're College Loan Corporation. We're dedicated to helping you refinance your college loans with interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest rates in nearly 40 years. So tell those old loans to hit the road and call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Iran is saying it will not allow stricter inspections of its nuclear sites until the International Atomic Energy Agency recognizes its right to peaceful nuclear technology. The country has been facing growing international pressure to allow the tougher inspections amid accusations it's been pursuing nuclear weapons, a charge Iran has denied. Middle East correspondent Roxana Saberi has more from Tehran.
Iran's government spokesman says before agreeing to tougher inspections, his country wants what he calls the recognition of its right of peaceful use of nuclear energy. Abdullah Ramazanzadeh says the matter is not something Tehran can bargain about. Iran has said it is ready to begin talks to sign what's known as the Additional Protocol. The agreement would allow international inspectors to make unannounced visits at Iran's nuclear sites. Iranian authorities had said earlier that in return for signing it, they wanted help with nuclear technology and the lifting of certain sanctions. Roxana Saberi, Tehran.
And I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Cucumbers, jazz, Gwyneth Paltrow, and khakis. Speaking of cool things, how's your vehicle's cooling system stacking up for the summer? Don't sweat it. When I come back, I'll tell you how to chill out. We've all seen the Tornado device on TV and wondered if it really worked. I was also skeptical at first until we tested 6 Tornado units. And in every case, we got more miles per gallon and felt more power. Gasoline's expensive, so when we find something that saves us money, it just makes sense to get it. Call 800-500-8880 and order your Tornado unit today. Or visit TornadoAir.com. It's hot, and you're working hard. You can't go another foot till you cool off. Aha, now you know how your car feels. In fact, overheating's the number one cause of breakdowns. Like our bodies have a cooling system, cars do too. They rely on radiators to keep their engines from boiling over. To properly cool, these systems must be maintained with correct proportions and levels of coolant water mixture. So this summer, think cool, calm, and collect the money saved by radiator check. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Written about in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and Pravda. He spent time with the Pope and the Dalai Lama. And now you can talk with Tom Hartman simply by calling 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program here on the IE America Radio Network. Also on Sirius Satellite, stream 145, and on the web at ieamericaradio.com. Radiopower.org and live365.com. On Friday, China announced that North Korea, the United States, and the other countries in the talks, that was South Korea, Japan, and Russia, had agreed to hold more discussions about this North Korea nuclear weapons situation that's going on. And yet, a day later, North Korea said, well, we don't see any need for any further discussions. Apparently because the United States didn't put anything on the table. There was no, well, if you'll do this, then we'll do that, as there have been with previous administrations. You wonder to what extent this has to do with John Bolton, who didn't show up for the talks, I think in large part because the North Koreans may not have walked into the room with him. They have referred to him as scum. He has referred to North Korea as a hellish nightmare in the grip of a tyrant. And Bolton worked for Barry Goldwater in 1964, then had a relationship with Senator Jesse Helms in the 1980s. He worked, this is from the New York Times today, worked on a campaign to counter voter registration efforts that were undertaken on behalf of blacks and organized labor. He worked to counter these efforts. He was the assistant attorney general under Edwin Meese, where he struggled to beat back inquiries into matters including the Iran-Contra scandal. In 1989, he worked to block Palestinian admission to the World Health Organization and UNESCO. And more recently, he led American opposition to the International Criminal Court. This guy is the neocon of neocons. And you wonder to what extent American foreign policy right now with regard to Korea is being driven by the considerations of the real world and to what extent it's being driven by theories about how things should be or idealism or doctrinaire philosophy or whatever you want to call it. I'm trying to find relatively neutral terms. I'm running out. And hopefully to shed some light on this today, we have John Pfeffer, who's the author of North Korea, South Korea, U.S. Policy at a Time of Crisis, a book that will be coming out from Seven Stories Press this month. He's a steering member of the Alliance of Scholars Concerned About Korea. From 1998 to 2001, he was an international affairs representative for the American Friends Service Committee, also known as the Quakers, I believe, based in Tokyo. He has visited North Korea three times and South Korea more than two dozen times. I've been to South Korea quite a few times myself. And so, John, I'm very pleased to have you on the program here today. Welcome.
Thanks for having me on.
Tell us what's your take on what's going on there right now? What's the situation here with North Korea?
Well, you talked about John Bolton in your introductory remarks, and there are basically two camps that we've identified within the Bush administration. There's the Bolton wing, which is the ideologues, the folks who want regime change. They want it immediately in Pyongyang. And then there are the folks who, perhaps like Colin Powell, are pursuing negotiations. They want a negotiated settlement.
But Bolton works for Colin Powell.
Right. Well, there's no question that the remarks that Bolton made in Seoul, in which he referred to Kim Jong-il 41 times in a negative light and called North Korea a hellish nightmare, there's no question that those remarks were well vetted by the administration.
So you think Colin Powell approved of those?
Yes. And when Jack Pritchard, who's a North Korea hand, stated to North Koreans that those remarks of Bolton's were just his private opinion, he came under intense pressure, and he, in fact, just resigned recently from his position. So it's very clear that Bolton's remarks, even as the United States was, heading over to participate in the six-party talks, that these kind of extreme views coming out of Bolton's mouth were, a kind of strategy of the administration. I mean, back in the Vietnam War days, Richard Nixon had the madman theory that if he was crazy enough, if he was perceived as crazy enough to do terrible things, by immense bombings of Cambodia and Vietnam, that would somehow restrain North Vietnam. And today we have a similar plan going on, except the president has delegated, has kind of subcontracted out the madman and has given that role to John Bolton, among a couple others. And that's to have that out there, to have the most extreme views out there so that North Korea knows that the United States is contemplating the worst possible strategies.
But isn't Kim Jong-il pursuing the exact same strategy? Look how crazy I am. I could blow up the world.
Absolutely. From North Korea's point of view, they're in a very, very poor situation. They're weak militarily. Their conventional forces have been deteriorating over the last 5 to 10 years. Their economy is in lousy shape. Their alliances with Russia and China are frayed. And they don't have too much to fall back on. After the war in Iraq, they came to a couple of conclusions, and that was the United States was bent on regime change, bent on preemptive strikes and preventive war, and really only one thing from their point of view was going to deter the United States from applying that doctrine to North Korea, and that is a viable nuclear deterrent. Whether they have one or not, well, that's an open question. I mean, it's very likely that they don't have it, but what they need is a credible threat. And without that credible threat, backed up by, you know, the supposed irrationality of the regime in Pyongyang, the United States will tomorrow launch a military strike.
Yeah, and they're thinking, well, it worked in Pakistan, for example. As soon as Pakistan exploded the bomb, we backed off. We're talking with John Pfeffer, the author of North Korea, South Korea, U.S. Policy at a Time of Crisis. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. It's 14 minutes after the hour. John, both North and South Korea have lived under dictatorships. The South Koreans, however, had a history of overthrowing right-wing dictators from Syngman Rhee, I think it's Syngman Rhee, in the 1960 April Revolution to Chung Hoo-dwan Doo-hwan in the 1980s. Why haven't these same kinds of revolutions that happened in the South happened in the North?
Well, that's a very good question. There's basically been a differing approach to civil society in the two countries after World War II. In South Korea, the authoritarian dictatorships tried simply to control civil society. In the North, on the other hand, the communist government absorbed civil society. So there, in fact, was no independent political sphere. Very little that would be considered independent at all in North Korea. There's no dissident movement that you would have found in Eastern Europe. There are no prominent dissidents like an Andrei Sakharov. There's simply nothing. The only choice in North Korea is to be quiet or to exit the country. And several prominent North Koreans, of course, have exited the country. But there is no civil society. There is no movement against the country. And that's been that way basically since 1945 with a couple of minor exceptions. So that's the major difference between North and South.
Yeah, do you see the regime in the North crumbling under its own weight? I mean, it seems that maybe I'm hallucinating or imagining this, but it seems that perhaps one of the hopes within this administration is that we're going to see a repeat of the collapse of the Soviet Union in North Korea.
Well, that's been a hope that the successive administrations have nurtured. George Bush Sr. administration expected that to happen in 1989, 1990. The Clinton administration expected that North Korea would collapse after the food crisis, the famine, hit in 1996. But North Korea, of course, had survived both of those. When George Bush Jr. came into office, he too was advised that Pyongyang, the regime in Pyongyang, was on its last legs and orchestrated policy accordingly. But it's still there. And I think there's a great deal of frustration among the regime change crowd in Washington. On the other hand, I think it also explains why, for instance, at the six-party talks, the United States refused to budge. I mean, what's interesting about...
Because we're holding desperately to this article of faith that they're about to crumble at any minute, therefore we shouldn't, we don't have to give them anything.
Exactly.
Pardon my interruption.
The two positions at the six-party talks, you'll notice that, in fact, they're very similar to one another, the North Korean position and the U.S. position. They both hinge on stopping North Korea's nuclear program in exchange for economic incentives and security guarantees. The difference of opinion, of course, is around sequence. Will North Korea freeze its program first? Will the United States provide a security guarantee first? Now, looked at it dispassionately, it's hard to imagine that a country like North Korea is going to give up its only bargaining chip in a kind of give-and-take negotiations. But the United States has refused to budge on this issue. And one could argue, as you just pointed out, that there is a compromised position between these two camps that we talked about at the top of the show, between the negotiators and the regime change camp. And the compromise is that the United States will pursue negotiations, but it actually won't negotiate. It'll participate in talks, but it won't do any give and take. And in that way, the negotiating camp gets the negotiations, the regime camp holds tight and waits for the day that the regime collapses.
John Pfeffer, author of North Korea's South Korea, U.S. Policy at a Time of Crisis, a book coming out this month from Seven Stories Press. John, to what extent do you think that the administration in North Korea, in Pyongyang, has been emboldened by the fact that most of the United States Army, or at least most of the U.S. forces that are mobile, are tied down right now in Iraq?
I think it may take some solace in the so-called military overstretch of the United States at the moment. But I don't think it takes it so seriously as to consider it a true advantage. After all, there's still approximately 100,000 troops in the region, 37,000 troops in South Korea. We've got an awfully large amount of military hardware in the area. And even if the United States weren't there, the South Korean military is really sufficient to deal with any kind of North Korean incursion. South Korea just announced it's going to have the largest military increase ever in the upcoming year. It's more than capable not only of dealing with North Korean threat, but dealing with it without the U.S. assistance. So North Korea is well aware of that. It's well aware of how its own military capabilities have declined precipitously in comparison to the South's military capacity.
Yeah, and now in the midst of this, we have a situation here in the United States where, again, to go back to today's New York Times, a Senate Democratic aide views John Bolton as a subversive force against diplomacy. He says, quote, "It's Orwellian to me that he's in the position he's in. He's the antithesis of who you'd want in that job," end quote. And you wonder what's going on when we've got these battles within our administration between the neocons and the State Department. And then in South Korea also, the conservatives and liberals, it's huge. We'll continue this conversation with John Pfeffer in just a moment. Stay tuned.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Thieves in High Places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
You're strapped into 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program. with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years
No, I'm talking about now.
Like the tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
John Pfeffer, author of North Korea, South Korea, U.S. Policy at a Time of Crisis. John, are we facing the possibility of literally World War III? I mean, if the Middle East... If we get stuck in the middle of a civil war in Iraq, if the region goes up in flames, and then if war was to break out in Southeast Asia, in South Korea, North Korea, in the Korean Peninsula, wouldn't this be an absolute worst case scenario? Is this a possibility, do you think?
Well, I think it's a terrible scenario, and it is a possibility. I would distinguish it from World War III in the sense that We of course would be the ally, but there would be no axis exactly. The various people we'd be going to war against would not be connected in any meaningful way. This is the
They were the axis of evil, John.
That's right. This is the fallacy that continues from the axis of evil. That North Korea would have any kind of truck with Iraq or with Iran. I mean, they may have some economic deals, but there's no ideological connections between them or among them before. But in terms of whether we might be heading toward war on the Korean Peninsula, I think that the Bush administration doesn't want war. It would like regime change, would like that to happen peacefully if possible, would like to avoid war for a number of reasons. One, that South Korea doesn't want it. I mean, 92-93% of South Koreans don't want any kind of military conflict to break out. It's an enormous majority. Number two, any kind of war that broke out would have devastating consequences in human costs. The Pentagon has estimated, you know, within just a few days of the outbreak of war, thousands and thousands of lives lost, U.S. soldiers as well as South and North Korean citizens. The third reason, I think, is electoral or political. At this point, as we've talked about it, the United States already has some fragile commitments around the world in Iraq and in Afghanistan. We are treading perilously close to the Q word, of course, in Iraq, to quagmire. To get involved in North Korea with uncertain results would be disastrous politically for George Bush as we head towards an election year. However, that said, I should add that North Korea, too, is not excited about a military conflict because they know that it would literally be suicidal for them since they're so outnumbered, not so much in terms of troops, but they're just outgunned by U.S., South Korean forces and Japanese forces. So despite that, however, I should say that it's very possible that war will break out inadvertently as a minor conflict escalates at the DMZ or sure. in the waters off the shore of the Korean Peninsula. And that's what makes this so dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, who could have thought that the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand would have led to World War One? There are conspiracy theorists out there who are suggesting that George W. will pull an October surprise out of the hat, that his father helped Richard Nixon put together an October surprise that was planned for October of 1960. It didn't happen because of bad weather, but it was the Bay of Pigs. That he did an October surprise against Jimmy Carter by negotiating with the Ayatollah to hold the hostages through the elections and help bring Ronald Reagan to office. That he did an October surprise last election cycle in 2002. It was actually a September surprise when he announced that, actually late August, but September kind of nailed it down, that he was planning more or less to go to war in Iraq, which flipped the elections in 2002. And that war in North Korea might be, particularly if it can be a limited war, but a conflict that will divert people's attention away from the failures of the Bush administration, would be the thing that would get George W. reelected in 2004. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. We've got a break coming up in just a minute, though, so let's get to that right after this break. We're talking with John Pfeffer, who's the author of North Korea, South Korea, U.S. Policy at a Time of Crisis, here with Tom Hartman, where democracy is still alive and well.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
Shell workers in the Niger Delta are on strike again, bringing the company's oil production there to a sudden halt. The workers say Shell's making plans to bring in expatriates from Europe to run its facilities, eliminating most of the local workforce in the process. Shell calls the complaint an unfounded rumor, but says it does have some restructuring to do at its Nigerian facilities, the details of which have yet to be announced.
Officials in New York State's Nassau County have a novel approach to handling a budget crisis. Stop paying the workers. If county officials follow through on their threats to implement their so-called lag payroll plan later this month, more than 1,000 corrections officers at the Nassau County Jail will see their salaries lag by 10 days' pay over the next 5 months. The missing funds could be collected without interest only when the guards quit their posts. The county says it'll help free up more than $2 million in revenue, but the Police Benevolent Association, which represents the guards, calls the plan illegal and is preparing a lawsuit.
Victory for an inflatable rat used in a protest by mechanics at a Ford dealership in Ohio. The mechanics at Fairfield Ford voted to join the International Association of Machinists last November, but the dealerships refused to recognize the union. So the workers hauled out a 12-foot inflatable rat earlier this year, which they've positioned on the median of the busy highway that runs past the car lot. The city of Fairfield cited the protesters for a zoning violation, claiming the rat was an unpermitted structure in a public right-of-way. The mechanics responded by filing suit in federal court, charging the city with violating their First Amendment rights to symbolic protest. Last week, a judge in Cincinnati issued a temporary restraining order against the city, meaning the rat can stay, and the court's expected to make the order permanent in a few weeks.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Mike Molloy Show.
We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, BartCop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man, or people who have more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to go on.
Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, I've heard newborn babies crying like a moaning dove, and old men with broken teeth stranded without love. Do I understand your question, man? Is it hopeless and forlorn? Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with John Pfeffer, the author of North Korea, South Korea, U.S. Policy at a Time of Crisis. John, in our chat room, which people can get to by going to TomHartmanShow.com and clicking on the chat room links, we have a lively discussion of this going on. And one of the folks suggests that China won't jump in on the South, but they might use, if there was a conflict on the Korean Peninsula, but they might use it as an excuse to take back Taiwan. And then another person says, I disagree. China's economy is too interwoven with corporate America for that to happen. China stayed very consistent in foreign relations, and their policy has been only one of peaceful change for North Korea. And he goes on. What are your thoughts about George Bush actually perhaps wanting, for electoral purposes, a conflict in the Korean Peninsula if he thinks he can control it? And if it were to happen intentionally or unintentionally, what would China do?
Well, the key question here is whether he could control it. Up until this point, North Korea has resisted all kinds of control. In fact, North Korea has been the one that has launched the most surprises. It, of course, back in 1998, when it felt it wasn't getting the half of the bargain that was promised to it by the United States from the 1994 agreed framework, North Korea launched a rocket with a satellite at its tip over Japan. That was, you know, a major surprise. So if the Bush administration is hoping to pull off an October surprise, for instance, or to control any kind of conflict, then it would be making a serious mistake. And we may find out that...
But we did that in Iraq. I mean, this making serious mistakes is nothing new for this guy.
Well, that's true. And so I don't want to say the Bush administration is not going to do it. However, we might find that an October surprise might come a lot sooner than the administration anticipates. We might have an October surprise this October, for instance, rather than the following October, if North Korea, again, frustrated at the pace of the six-party talks, sees that it has to do something else to get the United States to move off its position, its uncompromising position. So North Korea may in fact do something within the next month and a half to try to get some kind of concession from the United States, and that too might backfire. Now, what's China's role in all of this? This is a very complicated question. China has been extraordinarily frustrated with North Korea, and it's been frustrated with North Korea for over a decade. Those frustrations have only become public recently, in the last year or so. But basically, North Korea is not done the profound economic change that China has recommended that it do, and North Korea has been an unstable influence on its border. It's attracted more military attention than China would like to have attracted to East Asia. So it's very unlikely that China is going to do anything to destabilize the situation on the Korean Peninsula.
But, John, at the same time, China has been making noises about Taiwan. China's intentions towards Taiwan are not exactly a secret. And all they need is some provocation or some trigger. I mean, we've seen this over and over again in conflicts where, you know, something happens here and boom, it's an excuse for something to happen there.
Yes, there's no question that that China longs for Taiwan. I mean, it builds much of its foreign policy around the Taiwan issue. However, China has, you know, over the last couple years especially, demonstrated what we might call a certain maturity in its foreign policy. In other words, that it will put off its goals for the long term in order to create a better environment to act multilaterally in the region as well as act multilaterally in the world. Right now, China has a good thing going. It's got a strong coalition with Russia and Central Asia, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. It's mended fences with the United States. It's got better cooperation with South Korea and Japan on both economic and military issues. To go after Taiwan at this juncture would jeopardize all that China has built up over the last couple of years. I think what China anticipates is that it can gradually get more control over Taiwan rather than making a grab for it, which really would threaten so much of its interests in the region.
Yeah. In an interview, Richard Perle was critical of the Clinton administration's approach to North Korea. He called it a relationship between a blackmailer and a person who pays the blackmailer, equated it to something like that. And the neocons love to accuse anyone suggesting negotiations with states like North Korea as Chamberlain-style appeasement. Isn't this hardline approach quite dangerous?
It's extremely dangerous. The idea of somehow that all negotiations are appeasement kind of flies in the face of, well, one could say several centuries worth of our experience and knowledge of what constitutes diplomacy.
Diplomacy. It flies in the face of reality.
Exactly. I mean, negotiating is really an art when it comes to dealing with people you disagree with. That's what negotiations are for. That's what diplomacy is for. It's easy enough to have diplomacy, more or less, between the United States and Canada, the United States and Britain, perhaps a little bit more difficult with France. But with North Korea, that's precisely where we have to get in there and start talking. If we cut out the negotiation option, then we are open to all manner of evils. We open the Pandora's box, so to speak. We only have then one approach we have two approaches to the situation. We have the option to ignore the situation, which is essentially what the Bush administration has done for the last 2 years, or we can use the stick. We can use the military approach. And that is, as I said before, that would have enormous negative consequences.
Well, there are those, though, you know, I mean, I was sort of ridiculing, I suppose, those who suggest that what Neville Chamberlain did is being repeated. But the reality is that he did appease Hitler. Is there a point in this sort of a situation where the neocons actually have a point, where we shouldn't be doing a where we shouldn't be adopting a negotiating posture that actually is appeasement?
Well, I think the people who support engagement, and I would hope that the Democratic Party as well would eventually get over to this position, but they have to start seeing benefits in U.S. involvement in any kind of negotiations with North Korea. They have to stop presenting it as only giving things to North Korea. We get an enormous amount out of it. We get a improved business climate in East Asia, which is why, basically, people from George Bush Sr. through Alexander Haig, Henry Kissinger, have been pushing for negotiations with North Korea. They have business interests in East Asia that are at stake. We get enormous benefits in terms of a secure security situation. We get the possibility of really remarkable future agreements involving all of East Asia. Remember, East Asia is one of the most it can be one of the most economically advanced areas of the world. However, it's not knit together in any substantive way. There are no free trade agreements in the region. There's no security cooperation among all the countries of the region. And the reason why is because North Korea is the outlier. It's because the U.S. and North Korea don't have diplomatic relations, and that really is an obstacle. If you clear away that obstacle, a number of different possibilities emerge, such as rail links between Europe and Asia, a natural gas pipeline agreement between Russia and Korea, both of which, by the way, would involve U.S. companies. So it's not as
if Cheney and Bechtel could do that. Halliburton and Bechtel.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think the Democratic Party has not articulated the concrete benefits of engagement. In terms of appeasement, the word appeasement, generally speaking, we're talking about weaker parties appeasing stronger parties. There is no question that the United States and its allies are magnitudes greater in strength than North Korea. And North Korea is not threatening to invade any country, as Hitler had not only threatened but had invaded. North Korea is weak, and we've got to ensure as much as possible that it has a way out of its current predicament, in much the same way that, for instance, China in 1979 was given a way out of its peculiar political and economic predicament.
Okay, one just quick last question here. I know you have to go. South Korea, the people in South Korea are so divided on the issue of North Korean, the whole North Korean issue, that the conservatives and liberals hold separate Korean Independence Day ceremonies. What is happening between the conservatives and liberals in South Korea, and how is that influencing this whole drama that's happening between North Korea and the rest of the world?
Yes, it is a sharp divide in South Korea, and part of it is generational. There's the younger generation, which has, of course, no experience of the Korean War, no memory of the Korean War, and wants to, if at all possible, to promote reunification of the peninsula, but if not reunification, then at least a situation in which they're not threatened with war at every moment of the day. The older generation is a little bit more cognizant of the prices they paid in the Korean War and also the kind of assistance that the United States provided in that conflict. So there's that divide. However, there are a number of issues in which Koreans, as I mentioned earlier, have consensus across the generational divide, across the political divide. Almost no one in South Korea today wants military conflict. They may, quite a few may want Kim Jong-il to leave. They may want an entirely different government in North Korea. And, you know, who can blame them? It's a pretty appalling government. However, they do not want a military solution to the problem.
Yeah, right across the board. John, thank you very much. John Pfeffer, the author of North Korea, South Korea, U.S. Policy at a Time of Crisis, coming out this month from Seven Stories Press. John, thank you very much for being on the program today.
Thank you.
And moving along, this is going to be an interesting one. We really all need to be paying attention to this. I really think that this whole Korea situation is one that is being, that we ignore at our own peril. And it's not showing up on the radar screen of presidential politics, and it'll be interesting to see if, when, and how it does. During the early to mid-1990s, according to an article in the Consortium News by Robert Perry, during the early to mid-1990s, the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency was monitoring a series of clandestine payments from Sun Myung Moon's organization to North Korea. According to DIA documents obtained through the Freedom of Information Act, Moon's payments to North Korean leaders included a $3 million birthday present to Kim Jong-il, the current communist leader, and offshore payments amounting to several tens of millions of dollars to the previous communist dictator, Kim Il-sung. All of this came at a time of a strict U.S. government ban. Here is Reverend Moon, the guy who publishes The Washington Times, the newspaper which has never made money, but has always espoused this right-wing view, the more or less official newspaper of the Bush White House. And Reverend Moon, who paid $1 million to George Bush Sr. to give a speech, who has hired Jeannie Kirkpatrick, who has the long list of, you know, who loaned and then gave as a gift millions of dollars to Jerry Falwell's organizations. Here we have Reverend Moon, who claims himself to be sent to Earth to finish the unfinished job that Jesus Christ left behind. Here we have Reverend Moon giving money to the North Koreans. Reverend Moon, who is this supposedly this rabid anti-communist. To continue from this article, while negotiating those business deals with North Korea in the 1990s, Moon's organization also hired former President George H.W. Bush and former First Lady Barbara Bush to give speeches at Moon-sponsored events. During one Moon-sponsored speech in Argentina in November 1996, former President Bush said, quote, "I want to salute Reverend Moon, the man with the vision," end quote. One former member of leader of Moon's Unification Church told the author of this article that the organization had earmarked $10 million for George Herbert Walker Bush. Ex-President Bush's pro-Moon speeches came at a time, too, when Moon, now 80, was expressing intensely anti-American views. In the mid-1990s, this during Bush, during Clinton's reign as President of the United States, Moon denounced the United States as, quote, "Satan's harvest," and said that American women were descended from, quote, "a line of prostitutes," end quote. In a speech to his followers on August 4, 1996, Moon vowed to liquidate American individuality, declaring that his movement would, quote, "swallow entire America," end quote. Moon said Americans who insisted on, quote, "their privacy and extreme individualism will be digested," end quote. Apparently, he's hired John Ashcroft. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Preston in Denver's on the line. Preston, welcome to Tom Hartman Program. We've got about a minute here left in this segment.
Hi, what's Tom. Up? Thanks. I heard you yesterday on KNRC. You did a great job.
Well, thank you.
And I'm really appreciating your book, Unequal Protection. Regarding Korea, I just wanted to make a comment. I wonder... I was reading something by Howard Zinn, I think it was, on Z Magazine's website about the history of the Korean War, and I read that North Korea was essentially just absolutely leveled, that we bombed essentially every standing structure and that killed something like a million people. And I wonder to what extent that past war has created the North Korea of today. I mean, it seems time and again... we just level places that are largely defenseless, like Cambodia, and then the Khmer Rouge pops up, and we just focus on the Khmer Rouge, or we just focus on North Korea, or we focus on, say, the Ayatollah in Iran and say, boy, these people are crazy, and we don't think about how we overthrew Mossadegh in Iran, mm-hmm. and that was a democratically elected government.
Yeah,
so
40
I think,
years ago last month.
That's right.
Yeah, Preston, can you hold the line for just a minute? We've got
sure
a break here. I'll let you finish your point right after this break. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was as straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risk.
Well...
look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building.
Call toll-free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
The following conversation is real. It took place on March 1st, 2003, between an OnStar advisor and a subscriber.
OnStar Emergency, this is Rashawn.
Yeah, my mom's having a seizure while she's driving.
Okay, I currently have you on Interstate 75 North in South Rockwood, Michigan.
Yes.
I'm contacting the police, okay?
Okay.
Central Dispatch.
This is Rashawn from OnStar Emergency. Their child had just reported that their mother is in the vehicle having a seizure driving northbound.
With OnStar in your vehicle, you only have to press one button to connect with an advisor who can call for the help you need.
Emergency services en route to your location.
I'm scared.
Don't be scared. As long as you hear my voice, you don't have to be scared, okay?
If you have OnStar, press your blue button now to renew or extend your service. Make sure you and your family are protected.
They're here now? Yeah.
Don't cry. Now that the police are there, they'll be able to take care of mommy, okay?
Thank you.
All right.
OnStar. Always there. Always ready.
Tom Hartman Show.
Adam, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What's up?
I just find it that you guys are really cynical to believe that Cheney or Bush or any of these guys would risk troop lives to make money. You must think that these guys are really evil people.
If you go back to 1998 and read the Project for a New American Century, what they were saying basically, if we're going to continue to consume 25% of the planet's oil, then our security is at risk if we can't secure our oil supplies. So we have to secure the oil supplies by seizing control of the Middle East.
Is this what you say they said, or is this what they had stated in a policy and in a
this
in
is
a
what they
contract?
Said.
Why is this on CNN every night?
It was on CNN a year ago. It was on CNN in 1998. They wrote a letter to Bill Clinton demanding that he attack Iraq, and that letter has been a public document ever since. And it was signed by all of these guys who are now in the administration.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. And join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network. Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back from the January 3rd, 2001 Consortium News article by Robert Perry, Reverend Moon, the Bushes, and Donald Rumsfeld. In 1991, President Bush expressed his gratitude to Moon's newspaper by inviting its editor, Wesley Pruden, to a White House lunch just to tell you how valuable the Times has become in Washington, where we read it every day, said George Bush Sr., this in the Washington Times. Ironically, the article says Moon's newspaper joined in laying the blame for North Korea's progress at the feet of the Clinton-Gore administration. To its list of missed opportunities, the Clinton-Gore administration can now add the abdication of responsibility for national security, said the Washington Times on September 5, 2000. Not surprisingly, the Times did not mention that its founder and financial backer, the Reverend Moon, had lent a hand to North Korea. It goes on, equally unsurprising, former President George H.W. Bush and his about-to-be president's son have never explained the family's financial involvement with Reverend Moon. And goes on in that. And we've got Preston on the line. Preston, what do you think about this? You know, the involvement, the corporate money involvement between these guys and all these countries that they decide to deem the enemy.
Yeah. Well, that story reminds me of how Rush Limbaugh and people like that went after Clinton for so long for giving missile secrets to China. when the fact of the matter was that Lockheed Martin was fined $15 million by our government for sending missile technology to China. And they never mentioned Lockheed Martin at all. It was always Clinton, Clinton, Clinton. So they
it's a company that supports the Republicans aggressively.
Yeah, well, they're diverting our attention constantly from these big weapons deals that go on and the manner in which North Korea or other countries really serve this military-industrial complex. You know, they need this constant external enemy to which to frighten us by and to justify this $400 billion weapons budget we have. Like you said yesterday on KNRC, there's a lot of brainwashing going on, and I think there's quite a bit that we can do to counter that, including promoting IE America Radio through letters to station managers and through letters to editors of papers and through chat rooms.
And just calling station managers.
We need to challenge these Humpty Dumpties out there on our airwaves and offer alternative sources of info. And I want
and
to
take back America.
Yeah.
And take back America. Preston, we've run out of time here. The music means it's the end of the show. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Keep the faith there in Denver. This is the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Don't forget, if you're not registered to vote, get out there and register. If you liked what you heard, pass it along. Tell us, share the good word. It's time to take back America. It's time to create a renewal in this country of democracy. This is Tom Hartman. Our program today was produced in Detroit by Shar Jones, was produced by Joe McPherson and Louise Hartman. And join us tomorrow, same time, same place. We'll be right back here. Thanks.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.